Welcome. This is Cascade Church Portland's podcast. We exist to invite all people to join us as we follow Jesus together in bringing heaven to earth.
Good morning. My name is Kurt. It is good to see you. And we're kicking off a brand new message series this morning. We're going to be going for a couple weeks. Woohoo! And this is going to be, I think this is going to be a lot of fun. I think it's going to be very interesting and kind of what it brings out. And so as we talk through this, this is one of my invitations to you. As you're like, wait, what? What are you talking about? Notice what comes up for you and notice how you respond to that and wonder, like, why is that my response? Why is that thing there? Why do I feel that kind of first, like, no or yes, absolutely? If you agree really strongly or disagree really strongly, that's something interesting that you can learn more about. Huh, why is that such a strong emotion that I feel? So here's what we're going to do. We're going to start with an exercise. How many of you can see my water bottle right now? Yeah, we have a couple people. How would you describe the water bottle? I want to hear, just yell out. How would you describe it? Yellow with a black top. That's good. What else? Potentially full. There could be a cat inside of it, but you'd kill it if you opened it. No, I'm just kidding. Are you guys familiar with Schrodinger's? Okay, never mind. If you didn't, that got really dark for no reason, but just Google Schrodinger. You'll figure it out. What else? Yeah, ooh, that was good. About 24 ounces on a stand. What else? Ooh, it's Hydro Flask brand. That's good. Has a white logo on it. How many of you have heard something that you would disagree with? Anybody? Yeah. Like, no, I actually don't think that's true, or I don't know that that's the way that it is. The reason why we start off here is the message series that we're going into is called To Be Honest. And the two things that we're going to be looking at over the next 4 weeks are honesty and truth. What is truth? What is true? How do we know that something's true? And our relationship with truth is what we're going to call honesty. How can we be honest? What's the purpose of honesty? Why are we honest? You may have remembered a couple years ago, there was this thing that went viral. It was everywhere. It was, what color is the dress? You guys familiar with this? Yeah. Some of you are looking for a picture, but we don't have it. And there's a shoes one, did you say? Yeah. There's been a number of these where they put out a singular image of something, and based on how your eye picks up color, you would describe the color as being totally different. Some people said it was gold and black, is that right? And some people said blue and white. White and gold, blue and black. Yeah, those are very different colors, right? But people, based on their perception of it, would say this was it. And this is what was fascinating. People fought about this. Think about that. People fought about the color of a dress. And what did they say to people that said it was a different color than what they saw? You're wrong. Go check your eyes. That is not the color of the dress. We could have a big, long-standing debate over that water bottle. I mean, it could take the whole rest of the morning. And someone would say, what do you mean there's white writing on it? How do you know it's a Hydro Flask? That's not a Hydro Flask. It doesn't say Hydro Flask at all on it. And some of you would say, well, yeah, it clearly says Hydro Flask on it. Some of you say, well, how would you know that it's full? Or how do you know how many ounces it would hold? And we could have this big, long, impassioned debate over something that doesn't matter at all. What are people describing when they describe the water bottle? Their perspective. Based on where you're seated in the room, based on if you can even see the water bottle at all. I intentionally didn't tell you where it was because I wanted to see who would notice and see who would still be looking around being like, I don't even see a water bottle. I'm pretty sure these people are just making stuff up. There's certain perspectives on that water bottle that you're describing something that is deeply true from your perspective. And other people are describing something that's deeply true from their perspective. One water bottle. There is only one. And our interaction with it can be totally different. What do we do with that? And especially when we're talking about a dress or a water bottle, meh. But we're in a church, so we're talking about faith, God, religion. What do we do when our perspectives of God, our perspective of how we talk about God, is different? This feels like if there were hills to die on, this is a hill to die on. What is absolute truth? If we believe that God is, there's one God, and this God in his very character, God's own character, is truth, then there is one truth. So to have different interactions with this truth, for many of us, it scrambles our brains. That can't be true. And so we will defend to the death our perspective of true. Why? Because if our perspective isn't true, then we don't know the truth. We have no interaction with it. We have no engagement with it. So, are you guys intrigued just a little bit? Okay, if you aren't, I'll try again later. But hopefully you are. Let's look at some definitions, because if you go to a church, this is how you start off every message. You define words. But it is helpful as we go into this particular message series, we want to get on the same page we talk about. First is truth. The definitions we pulled out is the body of real things, events, and facts. Now, if you read the newsletter, we talked about the truth. What is, when we talk about our engagement with real facts, what is the capital of Oregon? Yeah, good job, all of you. For people that are from the East Coast, they're like, I don't think that's right. I think it's Portland. It's much larger, right? And then the same thing of other East Coast. If you just try and name all the capitals, is anyone really good at that? I'm interested. Is someone like really good at state capitals? That's awesome. I am terrible at it. I just name the city I've heard of. That's all I can do. It's like probably Los Angeles in California, and I grew up there. Truth in our engagement with facts, it becomes quite simple when there's one agreed upon reality, right? So when it comes to state capitals, there aren't multiple interpretations of what the state capitals are. There's 50 of them, and they're static. They're the same. Now, can they change? Absolutely, they could change. But when they change, they're going to change for everyone. Half of the country will not still be recognizing Salem as the capital, and the other half would be like, no, they moved it to Eugene. That's not going to happen. If that information changes, it changes for everyone. These are examples that are really clear on what we do with this is truth. You can Google it. You can look it up. You can verify through other people. Because ultimately, now this is important, when we say truth is defined by a body, a relationship of facts and information, it's ultimately what we all agree is factual. Is this making sense? We all have to agree that this is factual. If we said Salem's the capital, and everyone in our country said, nope, I don't agree with that, guess what? It wouldn't be true. It's only true because we all agree, yes, that is true. And this changes a bit when we have different things like gravity. You can disagree that gravity exists all you want. It will not stop impacting your body and holding you to this earth. You can call gravity something else, but it doesn't mean that it's not gravity. That ultimately this thing exists, we could all decide collectively, we could take a vote and say, we don't like gravity, we don't agree to that. Gravity doesn't exist, and we would not all start floating. Our decision about it doesn't matter. And there's some truths that are culturally agreed upon, and there are some truths that are a description of events that whether we agree with it or not doesn't mean it is true or untrue. Now, these are the area when we talk about these kinds of truth, there's like a comfort there, right? When we talk about state capitals, if we were to go around and try and guess all the state capitals, it's deeply comforting to know you're either right or you're wrong. Now, many of us don't want to be wrong. We don't want to get the information. But it's nice to know that there is one agreed upon answer, and we can learn it, and then we can know it, and we will never be wrong again. Doesn't that feel comforting? Now, what happens after you die? Oh. There's something that happens after you die. But what is our relationship with that truth? What's our engagement with that truth? If you go and Google what happens after you die, you're going to get lots of different information. Lots of people have claimed to have gone there, and they brought back, this is what happens when you die. And you know what? All of the accounts of what happens after you die, those people that have had these death experiences and have come back, they don't align. It's not all the same thing. It's different. Well, what do we do with that? What is the truth about what happens after you die? We all agree something happens, but our relationship to that truth isn't something that we can just culturally accept, and it isn't an agreed upon fact that exists whether or not we agree with it. So it's not like gravity, and it's not like Salem. It's something else. And yet, have you ever heard people debate about what happens after you die? Oh, yes. Oh, yes, people will debate. They will assume firmly, this is what happens after you die. There's a great certainty that we know what it is and what our relationship with it. And they will tell you, you're wrong. That's not what happens after you die. Which, when you think about it, that's a fascinating conversation. What's going on there? What's happening in our engagement with that? There is a truth, but what's our relationship to it? The other definition that we have there is of being, sorry, if we go back to truth, the first one is a body of real things, events, and facts. The other is of being in accord with fact or reality. Truth isn't just something that's true, it's also our relationship with it. And we've kind of talked about that event. So truth is two things. It is a reality, it's something that happens, but it's also our relationship with it. Going back to the water bottle, truth about the water bottle is its physical makeup, okay? That is a 40-ounce hydro flask water bottle. I won't get into the color because we would all disagree about what color it is. It has a pigment. How about that? There are some agreed upon facts about what is true, and there's also your relationship with it. Your description of how you engage and see those things are both exposing what truth is. Now, what's honesty? The honesty definition is free from fraud or deception. So these are always great definitions. When you go just with the opposite of it, it's like, not that. If you have any kind of fraud or deception, which we talk about those terms, which means to deceive someone else, to take something that is true and to very strongly tell someone, going back to the example of the capital of Oregon, no, it is definitely Portland. I've seen a building that looks very much like a Capitol building in Portland. And if you're trying to intentionally mislead people for a purpose. Now, I'll give you one example of this. I've talked before how I worked at a youth camp, and I worked there for many years. And one of my favorite things to do after I'd been there for a couple of years was I was a part of the greeting crew. So we would go to the airport, and we would hold up signs, and we'd pick up people that were coming there for the first time. And one of my favorite things to do is to pick up people from out of state, and then the whole car ride, the van ride to the camp, I would intentionally mispronounce the names of all of the cities around there because I was the local and just convince them that, like, wait, you're saying it weird. Santa Cruz? It's Santa Cruz? That's how we say it here. Don't go around telling people Santa Cruz. They're going to make fun of you for your accent. Santa Cruz. We would just mispronounce everything. It is mean and hilarious if you're me. If you're watching that happen, if you've ever watched someone confidently mispronounce something, that's funny. I don't care who you are. That is really, really funny. It was intentional fraud or deception. I was giving them bad information. I was misrepresenting our relationship to this truth for what? For fun. I thought it was interesting. There was a purpose behind the deception. Honesty is I'm giving you what is a true reflection of my engagement with this truth or honesty. If I really believed that the true definition of Santa Cruz was Santa Cruz, I could have done the same thing, but it wouldn't have been a joke. It wouldn't have been fraud or deception. It would be honestly wrong information. Do you see that? So it's important. One of the things when it comes to honesty, it isn't the information that makes something honest or dishonest. Are you with me? That's not what makes it honest or dishonest. It's your relationship to the thing that is honest. If you have an intent to deceive other people, now it's dishonest. Now it's fraud. Now it's deception. But there's a lot of things that we hear where we say, they're deceiving me, or they're deceiving you, or they're giving you bad information. They might just be giving you their information. which does not mean that they're dishonest. It's still wrong, but it doesn't mean it's dishonest. It's interesting how honesty works. The other one is marked by free, forthright, and sincere expression. These walk hand in hand. People are saying freely, they're not hiding anything. They're saying, this is my relationship with this thing. Let's get to emotions and experience. Have you ever met someone, and the first time you met them, they disclose a lot of information about themselves? Like a lot of information about themselves. Like, yeah, this is where I grew up. I've probably seen about 6 circumcisions. Do you want to hear about them? And you're like, this is free and forthright. This is honest information. It's a lot to take on first getting to know you. It's, are you hiding anything? Are you holding anything back? And this is what's significant about this. A lot of times, culturally, we describe honesty and the most honest person as the person that is sharing the most information. I don't know that that is necessarily what honesty or what the intent of honesty is scripturally, okay? Because we talk about honesty in the Bible, and we're going to look at some of the different verses that talk about being honest with one another. The Bible definition of honesty is still this. It's free and forthright. It's without fraud and deception. We'll kind of see those characteristics in it. But it's not who's disclosing the most information the most freely. There's a purpose and intention behind honesty and how it explains and exposes our relationship with things that are true. And it's not just who can share the most information. Because here's another thing that's true about honesty. I do this a lot. When someone asks you, how are you doing? And you share something that's true for you. It's a hard struggle for you. But I share it this thing so I don't have to share this thing that I don't want to share. Do you know what I mean? It's misdirectional sharing. A lot of times when we have something that's really hard in our lives that we don't want to talk about, we know that like this person will be on to me. If I just say, everything's great. They're like, no, it is not great. You are clearly lying to me. They're like, yeah, it's actually really hard right now. I got a flat tire and I'm just bumming me out. People are like, oh, okay. It has nothing to do with the flat tire. There's something else that is making something really difficult in your lives. You didn't lie. You were sharing something. You were free and forthright with one experience of your life. But when are you answering the question, how are you doing? Are you tracking with me? There's something else that's being asked when people are saying, how are you doing? That isn't, give me a description of why you're not feeling good right now. Make something up. It's, are you willing to be free and forthright, open with how you're experiencing the truth of this world, of what living is, of what life is. So, here's what we're going to do. If you have your Bible with you, we are going to look at a run of verses in Proverbs. Proverbs is found in the Old Testament. If you, most of you, we have it like digitally. But if you have a hard copy Bible, a great way of finding it, just like halfway of the Bible, you'll probably hit Psalms. It's a big book. Proverbs is right next to Psalms. These are these statements, and one of the things that's interesting about Proverbs, it's these statements of truth. It's these axioms, that these are true things about the world and how the world works. It's wisdom. It's these kind of things that if you've been through any amount of life, if you've seen different things, these are kind of reoccurring themes that we've seen throughout humanity. And there's all kinds of, every culture that has ever existed has some sort of distilled wisdom that they pass down and share. A lot of times we'll share them with one another in these little idioms. Are you familiar with idioms? Or these kinds of statements that we use that kind of boil down really complex ideas over long periods of time and lots of different people's experience to these little truisms, these little statements. This is what Proverbs is. This is Proverbs 12, and we're looking at 17 through 20. An honest witness tells the truth, but a false witness tells lies. The words of the reckless pierce like swords, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Truthful lips endure forever, but a lying tongue lasts only a moment. Deceit is in the heart of those who plot evil, but those who promote peace have joy. And the way that Proverbs work is there are these usually kind of these two statements where they're juxtaposing two different ideas, and there's just a lot of them kind of stacked together. Sometimes they have interaction with each other, but from one verse to the next, they may not really have any interaction with one another. They're kind of exposing different things. The reason why we pulled up these is you look at honesty and truth are both there. You can see the relationship. An honest witness tells the truth. And what's helpful is it's juxtaposed with the false witness tells lies. Camping there for a second, a question for you. You're in a court of law. Why would a witness lie? A witness, the description of a witness is someone who interacted with some sort of situation. They were there, they saw it, they heard it, they had some sort of senses-based interaction with an event, and they're sharing that, they're relaying that to you. Why would someone who had an experience of something, it happened to them or it happened around them, why would they lie? As you think about it, I want to give you three different stories throughout, these are all happening in the United States, U.S. history, of different witnesses who lied. And let's see if we can find some common threads. The first I want to share with you is about a man named George Freeman. This was in the 1980s. And there was in different parts in the 1980s, there was this huge rise of being concerned about satanic cults and people that worship Satan and like this idea that they were these groups of people. And this was at the McMartin Preschool. At the McMartin Preschool, there was accusations that the kids had had these different experiences of the occult. The man's name was Ray Buckley. He was the son of the people who owned it. And they were specifically against him, that he had done different satanic rituals with the children and had brainwashed them to worship Satan. And what was fascinating is some of the key testimonies in this case came from the children, and the parents had given the children these stories that they shared that were very clearly, they turned out to not be true. They described that under the preschool, there was these series of tunnels that they would walk through, and some led to graveyards where they would dig up the remains of the dead. They actually dug down in the basement of this preschool, and guess how many tunnels they found? None. The key witness was a man named George Freeman, who Ray Buckey, who was the son of the owner of the preschool, they had actually been in prison together at one point. So start to think about this, start to put this together. The owner of the preschool, the son was in prison for some period of time. I wonder how the parents found out or how what their interaction with that truth was. What they ultimately did was the prosecutors who felt that something wrong had happened, but they didn't know what it was, had convinced George Freeman to say that when he was in prison with Ray Buckey, I didn't want to confuse names, that he practiced in the occult and was very much into satanic worship. Now, it turns out none of this information was true. Why would George Freeman say that? Information found out that the prosecutors had been paying his living expenses and had cut a deal with him for his length of stay for him to be in prison. Another story. This is also in the 1980s. A woman named Marvella Brown. There was a shooting in a convenience store where the owner was shot and killed. Four suspects had been a part of it. They had no tangible evidence. They never found the gun. But Marvella Brown was a key witness that said that a man named Glenn Ford, she had seen him earlier, and he had had a gun, and he was the one who fired the shot. He was the one that killed them. A lot of it hinged on this. Now, this was fascinating because you really don't see this unless you're watching like one of those old courtroom dramas. She actually crumbled under cross-examination and admitted she was lying. She said that she had seen it, and then she said, actually, no, I didn't. She had been shot at one point, and she says, that actually impacts my memory. What is fascinating about this case in particular, no hard evidence. She admitted that she was lying. She was a key witness. Glenn Ford was still found guilty by the jury and was sentenced to death. This was in Shreveport, Louisiana. It was only the governor that stepped in and gave him a lifetime sentence until they could find out later. Sealed court documents found out that who had actually done it was the other two parties. They were brothers, Henry and Jack Robinson. Marvella Brown was the girlfriend of Jack Robinson when the other man was there that actually fired the shot. Interesting that she would lie. Last one. You might be familiar with this. This is during Vietnam War. Captain Ernest Medina. In My Lai, there was a massacre. Soldiers had gone in. They killed hundreds and hundreds of people, of civilians. When this news came out years later, Lieutenant Colley was put under trial because he had been there for it. He claimed that he was under the orders of Captain Ernest Medina to do this. Ernest Medina said, nope, I had no information of that. I didn't know it was happening. I didn't even hear about it until a year later. Ultimately, Captain Medina was cleared of all charges and Lieutenant Colley was found guilty. Soon after that, Captain Ernest Medina retired from the military. Several years later, he was asked to a trial for his brigadier commander with some different charges. At that trial, he admitted, I lied. I absolutely knew about the My Lai massacre. Why did he wait? Why did he not tell the truth? Because he had retired from the military, and at this point, he could no longer be court-martialed for perjury. Why do witnesses lie? Witnesses lie. We tell something that's true. We say something's true that's not true because there's a desire to protect ourselves, the information that we hold strong to us, our communities, our families, our loved ones. People don't just lie to lie unless there's a deeper, unless there's a psychopathy present. There are certainly people in the vast minority of our culture and of our world who lie for no reason. But people who lie are doing so for a reason. They're trying to protect something. Here's why I go through all those stories. When we feel like something is true, when we feel like we have an honest interaction with the truth, whatever the truth is, whatever your experience of the world is, whatever your relationship with who God is, who Jesus Christ is, and you're expressing this and someone else says, that's not true or that's not right. When we encounter a violation of our perspective of the truth, we can get defensive or we can get curious. In these cases, the prosecutors hinge their cases on these testimonies. Now, in the case of Captain Medina, it was something that they didn't know was true or untrue. But in the other two, the prosecutors needed those testimonies to get a guilty plea. We hear those, and we can either get defensive and say, that's not true, that's not right. Or we can say, why would they say something that I don't feel like is true? In the same way, in our world, we encounter people all the time, especially in our country right now, and this has been true for a long time, but it's certainly heightened right now, in the political spectrum. We stand on two different sides of the political aisle. We have two different interactions with the truth, and it's just one side against the other side saying, you're wrong, you're lying, that's not true. Has anyone ever asked, why is that their interaction with the truth? Why is that their perspective in the truth? Where are they sitting? Where are they living that that would be the description of these things? Marvella Brown was lying, but she was lying for a reason. She was trying to protect someone that she loved and was close to her. That didn't mean that she wasn't lying, and it doesn't make the lie okay. But if you weren't so busy trying to tell her she was lying and start asking questions about why would she lie, now you can start to discover, oh, there's more going on here. There's more at stake for this individual. Honesty. Honesty is our perspective of the truth, our interaction with the truth, how we're bouncing off of the truth. We spend too much time trying to defend our interaction in the way that we bounce off the truth and not enough time asking, why is this someone else's perspective of the truth? Why is this someone else's relationship with the truth? Why would they see the world this way? That water bottle is a thing. We've called it the truth. And we've talked about there's different perspectives, there's different viewpoints that you have of that based on where you're sitting in the room and if you could see it at all. If we were collectively, as a church, as a community, if we wanted to get the most accurate description of that water bottle, what would we need? We need everybody's eyes. We don't just need one or two people's eyes. We wouldn't just do an eye check and find out who has the best vision in the room. that wouldn't give us a whole interaction of what that water bottle is. We actually need everybody's interaction with it, because everybody's interaction is going to tell us something about that water bottle. It's going to create the fullest picture possible. I absolutely believe that there is truth. I believe that there is absolute truth. I believe there's a God who created this world and created one absolute version in this world and that has a view on it. And in fact, God is, and what the truth is that God perspective. When I'm at my worst, I feel challenged and I feel like I have to defend my viewpoint of what is true. Going back to the water bottle, Jonathan said, there's white writing on it. It says hydro flask. If you're in the back, you can't see that. You could tell Jonathan all day he's wrong. And you wouldn't actually be protecting yourself or getting closer to the truth. You would actually just be denying some other perspective that would be really, really helpful for you to have a better interaction with what is true. Other people's perspective of the truth is not meant to deny or deflate yours. It's just to give us a fuller picture. We fought like a country, like the second Civil War, about the colors of the dress. But not until we sat and said, why would someone's view of this dress look differently, that we'd start to discover, oh, the way our eyes perceive color and the way this particular dress is set up, it actually reveals different colors to different people. Oh, that's interesting. Everybody has something to add to this conversation about truth. Now, does that mean that everybody is telling the truth? That no one's meaning to fraud or deceive others? Oh, absolutely not. There's absolutely fraud and deception. Usually for the sake of self-preservation or the preservation of the people that are closest to us. But why they would lie or why they would be fraudulent or deceitful actually gets us closer to the truth. Are you with me? When Marvella Brown said, yep, Glenn Ford did it, and they were like, no, that does not seem right. It's not until you asked about her relationship with the other people that were there that you actually got closer to the truth of what happened in that situation. If you just tried to convince everybody she was wrong, you wouldn't have gotten closer to the truth. You just would have gotten closer to not having Glenn Ford go to jail, not any closer than getting the actual shooter into jail. Are you with me? Too often we reject other people's stories, we reject other people's perspectives because we feel challenged and threatened that somehow it invalidates our relationship to the truth, instead of saying, why would that be their version of the truth? Here's my challenge for us as a people. Oh, I want to do one more thing. Let's go to Galatians. We want to look at Galatians 5. This is something that in Christian circles is somewhat well-known, but I think it should be more well-known. If we're ultimately determining, we're coming up with a perspective of what is God's truth, and it's messy information, it's not clean like state capitals, how do we determine what people's, how they're exposing some part of the truth? I think Galatians, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. I love this line. Against such things, there is no law. Those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. Since we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit. What are people's truth, their experience with the truth? What is the fruit that it's calling into being? What's the fruit that it's exposing? If you go back to that verse in Proverbs, it said that the people who lie that have, they're speaking the truth or are bringing about peace in our world, at their heart is joy. This is something that we see as the fruit of the Spirit. People who are lying are usually trying to bring something else into the world, or they're trying to protect one of these things in a way that is violating the very thing they're seeming to protect. People who want to lead campaigns of war to gain peace, do you see? We start to get away from the thing we want the most by leading into its exact opposite. And one of the ways that we know ultimately how is this an interaction with the truth is that we have in Scripture, we have from God, these are the characteristics you're going to see from people that are bouncing off and are interacting with the truth. There's a peace, there's a kindness, there's a forbearance, there's a patience. And it's a good question and a framework to turn back upon ourselves. If you are vehemently defending the truth with anger and vitriol and tearing others down, I have a hard time believing that that is your interaction with the truth. That the truth is actually the thing you're most interested in engaging. Because the truth of God is not easily offended. God is not up in heaven right now being like, whoa, they took the Christ out of Christmas? Are you kidding me? That's like the whole thing. God, Christmas, put the Christ back into Christmas. God is supremely confident in the nature of who God is. God isn't walking around with thin skin. The truth is the truth, regardless of our interaction with it. And so there's a deep peace and welcoming. There's a love that flows from God, because God does not have to defend vehemently the truth, otherwise it will be stepped on and ruined. It's impossible. The truth exists regardless of our interaction with it. So people that are bouncing off of the truth of God share these common characteristics. I give this to you not as a weapon to use against others and to say, you have no patience, you're clearly not engaging with the truth. But instead to say, are these fruits of the Spirit flowing out of you when you feel the sake to defend the truth that you've experienced? When you're sharing your perspective of the God of the universe, do these fruits of the Spirit flow through you, or is it something else? Life is helping us encounter. I'm going to give for you. Who are we in relationship with that is helping us encounter truth from a different perspective? I met this week with a woman who does work here locally with refugees, welcoming refugees in. We've talked about this in the past, but just to talk about it again, a refugee isn't just a name that someone decides that they want to be. A refugee is a United Nations given status where you have to go through different tests, you have to go through a different system to be given refugee status. It's an official status that you have left your country. It's been demonstrated that you had to leave your country of origin, where you were from, or your life was being threatened, that you would be killed. In the United States, there are strong feelings about refugees. Some people are very excited to welcome. Some people are like, I'm not so interested. She was telling us this story about a family from Iraq and his life, a man and his 7 children. His home was burned to the ground, and his life and the life of his wife and kids was threatened. He had to flee. Do you know why his life was threatened? Because he had helped United States soldiers as a translator during the Iraq War. And when the United States was no longer there in the same military capacity, his life was threatened because he had aided a foreign entity. And yet when people hear about an Iraqi citizen coming to the United States, they go, oh, we had a war there. I'm not so sure we should be welcoming people from Iraq. When the very reason his life was threatened is because he was trying to help this country. He had stepped into this place of helping the citizens here. And that story is not just in Iraq. It's true in Syria, and it's true in Afghanistan. The reason why I bring that up is that if we want a closer interaction to it, exclusive of the different things that is happening in the world, these different events and the factors that go into it, excluding people that come from other places and have other perspectives isn't actually getting us closer to the truth of what's happening. It's a lot like lying under oath to protect our own interests and what we believe to be our own interest. And we find in that case, a lot of times, we are hindering our own interest. We are hindering and pushing away people that are there for our aid to better share with us what is happening in the world, what God is up to, and how God is moving and working. And if we continue surrounding ourselves with people that see the world from the same place that we see the world, we have a very clear engagement with the truth from our narrow perspective. But the fullness of God's truth cannot be on display. This is true for all of us. If you're sitting here right now and being like, oh man, that was a good description of my mother-in-law. You're no closer to the truth. If you're like, oh gosh, my parents need to hear this message. No, I'm not talking to them right now. Who are you engaging with that sees the world from a different perspective than you do? They are not here to threaten the truth. They're here to expose it. They're here to share it. And we live in a world, this is a desperate message we need today. We live in a world that is more and more interested in surrounding ourselves with people who think the same way we do. We have a constant narrowing of the truth in our world, in our country, in our churches today. The hope here at Cascade and the value for diversity is ultimately exposing a value for truth. That God's truth would be on full display. We don't need similarity to get there. In fact, similarity keeps us from the truth. Diversity helps us see the truth. You might have a coworker or a family member that you need to get lunch or coffee with this week so that you can determine more, what is the truth? What is God doing? How is God moving and working in this way? Your perspective isn't wrong. It may just be limited. So what we're going to do here is we're going to move to a time of communion. And the reason why we want to do communion at the end of a message like this is because this is the work of Jesus Christ. When Jesus is with his followers for the Last Supper, and he's saying, I'm going to be killed, some of them got very defensive with that information. Jesus' truth was an offense to them, because they didn't want the story to end, and they'd already decided that's not the way the story was going to end. Peter, who is with Jesus, cuts off the ear of a guard sent to arrest Jesus. Why? Because he's defending his truth and his perspective of the truth. Jesus' invitation is, there's a larger truth going on here. Can you see it? Are you a fraudulent witness up here just to protect your own intentions, your own reality, your own version of the truth? This is why we want to stay open to who Jesus Christ is and where Jesus Christ is leading us. Because if we resist that, we ultimately resist the truth. My invitation to you is as you come up and you take the bread and the cup. And I want to invite the band. The band's going to lead us in a song. If you guys want to head up to the stage and get set. The invitation is as you grab the bread and the cup, you would sit with, what is my perspective? Why is my engagement with who Jesus Christ is, what the church is, who God is? What is it? Where does it come from? How do I see and engage with that? And I want you to sit and value that. Peter wanting to protect Jesus, his deep love of Jesus, it wasn't wrong. It just refused to let in an alternate story and therefore rejected some aspect of the truth. His protection of Jesus was good. The problem was that his protection of Jesus led him to not listen to Jesus. And a lot of times we're trying to protect a version of our faith or who Jesus Christ is, and that we're not allowing Jesus to tell us who he is and where he's calling and moving us in the world. As you take the bread and as you take the cup, my prayer is that is what you'd be taking in. Jesus, would you lead me closer to the truth, and would you lead me in relationship with people that see things from a different perspective, that this truth can be fully revealed?